It's Tuesday, June 22nd. I'm Stephen Fee, and this is a special M-word episode of The Pen Pod, a podcast from Pen America. This week at Pen America, we're holding a series of town halls called The M-Word, dialogue centering the voices of American Muslims, bringing together writers, artists, and thought leaders. In this special edition, our Clarice Rosas Sharif talks to our esteemed panel of advisors to discuss their work, why Muslim history and culture are key components in changing narratives in the U.S., and together they look ahead at this week's in-person and virtual events. I'm Stephen Fee, all that coming up on this special M-Word edition of The Pen Pod. American Muslim writers, artists, and intellectuals coming together for the M-Word. Clarice Rosas Sharif at Pen America has our special roundtable conversation.
As our regular listeners know, Pen America's mission is to celebrate creative expression and defend the liberties that make it possible. The M-Word series was launched in 2016 thanks to the support of the Doris Duke Foundation for Islamic Arts Building Bridges program. And this year, we are excited to share with you the M-Word Town Hall series. It focuses on centering American Muslim voices through live, in-person, and virtual conversations that bring together writers, artists, and thought leaders across a range of genres, expertise, and platforms. The conversation series was curated in collaboration with my guests today. Our trusted advisors served as advisors and curators for this week's events. Zahir Ali is history editor at Sapelo Square and oral historian. Adam Gagan is actor and artistic director of Performing Arts Mosaic. Aya Eldosugi is an organizer and grants writer for Performing Arts Mosaic. And Sue Beatty is a director of MPAC's Hollywood Bureau. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Really excited to be here.
Zahir, I want to start with you. Why is Muslim history also American history? And what does it mean to center Black Muslims in a conversation about history and American history?
Well, as a historian, for me, it like goes without saying why history is important, but I know that we have to be explicit about this. The histories of Black Muslims are important, and the history of Muslims are important in part because it counters the logic of Islamophobia that seeks to portray Muslims as outsiders, as aliens, or that seeks to flatten the Muslim experiences into a single experience or a single narrative or even a single demographic profile. The histories of Muslims, and in particular the histories of Black Muslims, reminds us of the long history of Muslims in the United States, of the diversity of people who make up Muslims in the United States, and how integral Muslims have been in not just shaping but transforming America. This is, of course, by no means exclusive to Black Muslims or Muslims of African descent. There are many, many Muslims and Muslim communities who have similar histories in America. But what is unique to the Black Muslim experience, I think, is, you know, from the experience of enslaved Muslims all the way to Black Lives Matter activists, we find stories of resistance, of resilience, of transformation, of a powerful social critique of American racism and classism, and of a deep political analysis and organizing against racial capitalism. And so there's a rich tradition here and a culture of self-determination that is reflected in music, in art, in literature, whether we're talking about jazz or hip hop, or even the writings of people like Malcolm X, in sports, in entertainment. And so it's really impossible to tell the story of the United States without Muslims, and certainly without Black Muslims.
Thank you. And do you think that right now in the US, we have a problem about people's attitude or understanding of history, period?
Yeah, one of my colleagues calls this a history wasteland. Although part of the American promise for some people is to come to America to start anew. And so part of that means forgetting the past. But the experience of of people of African descent, and this is certainly the experience of Black Muslims, has been a tradition of reclaiming the past, a past that was taken, a past that was stolen, a past that was robbed through the experience of enslavement, right? And so when you see the revival of Islam in the 20th century, not only is it just, you know, people gravitating towards a dynamic spiritual tradition in an affirmative way, but it is also a recovery, a reclamation of the roots of a religion that was planted in the United States hundreds of years ago. And so, you know, history is of great importance in the tradition of Muslims in the United States and the traditions of Black Muslims in the United States. And of course, history is something that we all need to make sure that we protect and we save and we preserve and certainly transmit to future generations.
Wonderful. Thank you. I think that this is so important, and we could, of course, spend so much more time talking about this very point. As I mentioned before, you are the history editor at Sapelo Square, and I wanted you to say just a few words about Sapelo Square as an organization, what they do, but also mention the wonderful work that Dr. Suad is doing there.
Yes. So Sapelo Square is an online resource on Black Muslims in the United States. And it was founded by Dr. Suad Abdul-Kabir, the accomplished scholar, activist, and artist in May 2015 in commemoration of Malcolm X's birthday. And its name, Sapelo, is taken from the Sapelo Islands, where historically was one of the oldest established Black Muslim communities during the period of enslavement. And so even our whole name and founding and sense of being is tied to that history. We feature a writing in politics, history, art, and culture, and religion. And we have several annual special projects. This year, for example, for Black History Month, we featured every day objects from the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture, which helps tell the history of Black Muslims in the United States. We had a special feature during the Muslim month of Ramadan, which daily written reflections from the Quran. We've also this year launched a podcast called On the Square, Real Talk on Race and Islam in the Americas with The Maidan, which is an online publication of the Ali Varel Ack Center for Global Islamic Studies based at George Mason University. And this summer is our second summer of Freedom School, where we're offering the community free virtual summer school with the leading scholars on Islam in America. And then finally, of course, there are collaborations like this one, which we are so excited and honored to be a part of.
Thank you, Zahir. And I'll come back to you in a bit. For now, let me turn to Sue. Sue, you're the director of MPAC's Hollywood Bureau. And for our audience, I wanted you to start by telling us briefly, what is the scope of work that you endeavor to take on in your daily work?
Yeah, thank you again for having us. And we endeavor to change the world in a positive way. Basically, the Muslim Public Affairs Council is a public policy advocacy organization that was established a little over 30 years ago. Our mission is to improve public understanding and policies that impact American Muslims by engaging our government and media. And so we have a two-pronged approach, the first being policy, which our DC office obviously works on, and changing the narrative of Islam and Muslims, which the Hollywood Bureau works on. And as we've seen throughout the years, policy and pop culture go hand in hand. But the reality is government really moves slow. And if we left things up to government, change would probably never happen. And that's why it's so important to have pop culture in the mix so it can nudge government along. In a nutshell, we work in the industry to change the narrative by doing three major things. Number one, creating a pipeline of screenwriters in the industry. And we do this through our screenwriting labs and directly introducing our screenwriters to studios, networks, and production companies. Number two, consulting on TV and film projects. We do this by getting the scripts, giving the feedback, the notes, and answering questions. That is less impactful than the second way we do consulting, and that is through roundtables and writers' rooms. We prefer to get into the writers' rooms before the script is written, before, you know, they finalize the character, because once that's done, it's very difficult to change it the way you think it should be changed. Oftentimes we leave these rooms and they had one way of thinking about the character. And then when we're done, they think about things totally different. So by giving notes and doing roundtables with writers, those are the two ways we do consult. And the third is we contribute our thought leadership by publishing our op-eds in the trades. And in fact, we just had one published earlier this week in the Hollywood Reporter about a really cool show called We Are Lady Parts. If you haven't watched it yet, you should be. And then also we contribute our thought leadership through organizing and speaking on panels, which is why I'm so excited about our panel on June 25th. But those are the three things we do in general. I just wanted to add, our ideology is based on the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet, peace be upon him. And there's a race within the Muslim space, and that's the race to do good. And that's really what we thrive to do. And when I say we're changing the world, we're not looking to convert anyone.
Thank you, Sue. I love that you just went right to the point and say that your goal is to change the world, right? Because I think that that's where there's been always such an affinity with the work that you do and the work that we do here at Penn. And it's great to be able to put these two things together for our audience. I wanted to talk about the current moment and the opportunities for change in terms of our political, cultural, and social moment. And to do that, before I ask you the question, I was reminded of something that Pan America's president, Ayad Akhtar, recently said. He said, "Current change is running through our world. And it's a moment when books and literature not only reflect these changes, but are part of shaping them. What better time could there be for conversations about the systems we've inherited and the changes we aspire to see?" And I wanted to ask you specifically, is the film and TV industry ready to reflect the changes we are seeing in this post-pandemic moment? What are the conversations that we need to be having to make these changes possible?
That's a great question, Clarice. The reality is, whether or not it's the industry's ready for the change, it's coming, it has been coming, and it will continue to come, because what was okay before is not okay and will never be okay. So change is happening when it comes to marginalized communities. Change has been slower, I think, in film and theater and literature. Where we're seeing the faster, bigger change in the entertainment media is television. And it's historically been better a little bit at capturing the injustices that are happening in our country around marginalized communities. And that's, again, what I love about the conversation we're going to have on Friday. We're going to be bringing this to the forefront and acknowledging the gaps and talk about finding the solutions.
Thank you, Sue. I appreciate that. I'm glad to have you being able to speak on these very important questions during our event on Friday. So I'll turn to you, Adam and Aya. And I think that you are doing, with Performing Arts Mosaic, really shining a light on the richness of the performing arts, bringing people together, literally giving them the stage to tell their stories and express themselves through arts and music. And building on what we've just heard so far, I wanted you both, and we'll start with you, Adam, can you tell me a little bit about how we need to think about the transformative power of the arts, of storytelling, of live performances?
Well, I discovered storytelling, I'd say, about 5 or 6 years ago when I moved to New York City. Before that, I had no idea that people got together and just told stories or produced events around telling stories. So the first time I told a story, it was about a painful breakup. And the reaction that I saw from the crowd, and this changed my perspective on how I would view situations or how I would approach situations in my life. And it changed how I would cope with things that had previously happened with me. And doing it in front of a live audience, it would bring people joy and it would show people a way to view situations in a lighthearted way. That's the power that I found in storytelling and in doing it in front of a live audience.
That's wonderful. And Performing Arts Mosaic is very, very intentional in terms of who they bring together on the stage and in the audience. So what's your philosophy in terms of gathering artists, musicians, content creators from the Muslim community together to be in the same space and to experience live performances together? How do you go about it and what's most important?
So our audience are not just a Muslim audience, and we don't label ourselves as just a Muslim community because we don't know how people label themselves and we don't want to put that pressure on our community. And so it's really important to us that people feel free and artists feel free to come and express themselves in their most authentic and most expressive and most free way that they can. We are representative of the diversity and the breadth of the Muslim community as it is in the United States, which we know is not always the case because Muslim communities can be so siloed by racial or ethnic lines. When you come to PAM, it's very much representation of what the world and what the larger Muslim community actually looks like.
Thank you. And what you're talking about is at the core of the Building Bridges program that is funding the M-Word series, creating these spaces that are open to all, and but also just making sure that people are aware of the richness and the range that exists within the Muslim culture and the Muslim community. I want to ask each of you, if you can single out an artist or an artistic performance that you feel our listeners should get to know, an artist that really allows you to have a deeper understanding of the richness of Muslim culture. So let's start with you, Adam.
Well, the thing with the shows that we do is that they're partially curated, but then it's also open for people to show up and perform. And we had so many people that we did not know. We did not know were in the community, found out about the event and would show up. And one that came to mind was somebody that was traveling. They were just visiting New York City and they came from Palestine and they stumbled upon the event. And they decided that night, you know what, I'm going to perform. And she told this amazing story about what had just happened to her the day prior in Washington, D.C., about how she was in a restaurant and they served her alcohol. And because of the language barrier, and it was a very comedic story, and she doesn't drink. It was just one of those moments that it wasn't planned, but it happened very spontaneously, and the audience reacted to it. And that was just one. But I feel like every show, something like that would happen, where it would be a very unexpected moment, and somebody from the community, maybe not somebody well-known, but they had a story to tell, and they would share their art, and we would all experience something really beautiful. But I'm sure Aya has a more solid examples of specific artists.
Thank you. Thank you. Aya, please take it away if you want to tell us about somebody in particular or a moment that you remember from the live performances.
It's hard to have a favorite because I love our live shows, but one of my favorite performances and one of my favorite artists in general is Afaq Mahmoud. And she did a performance, I believe it was at our 2019 Women's History Month show, where she read, it was a really short and it was a really funny poem, but it really also got to the heart of anti-Blackness in the Muslim community. And it was her discussing her experience at the mosque as a Black woman. And she's Sudanese and also speaks Arabic. So she was talking about the anti-Blackness that she faced and people talking about her in Arabic while she could understand them. And while our audience didn't all necessarily have that same experience, you could see the resonance that it had throughout the room. And so that's a poem because it's not exactly in that specific way something that the Muslim community in such a mixed setting necessarily is confronted with. So that poem and that moment really resonated with me. But Afaq as a poet, she's a very special poet to me, and I love her work.
I could not agree more. I was not at the performance that you just referred to, but I was very lucky to have Afaq come and join us for one of our M-Word events a few years back. And the room was, like you said, moved. We don't have to be moved in the same way, but her delivery, her work, her words were very powerful. So I want to turn back to you, Sue and Zahir, and ask you to also share some gems with us. What are the books or films or artists that come from the Muslim community or something that just brings you joy?
Well, anybody that knows me knows that really there is only one answer to the question of what artist is bringing me joy, and that would have to be Prince. So I just need to say that. Otherwise, you know, the purple family will come after me. So definitely Prince. But, you know, one of the things I've been doing during the pandemic, I started rebuilding my vinyl collection. There's something about the attentiveness that is required when you're listening to vinyl. And that has included acquiring like old school hip hop for me. So I know that you asked about contemporary artists, but I, you know, as a historian, I always got to draw in the older folk. And so John Coltrane's A Love Supreme, which isn't explicitly Muslim, but if you are Muslim and you read his liner notes, you definitely get a Muslim vibe. And then there's, of course, Eric B. and Rakim and Public Enemy and these artists who had Islam very casually be a part of their expression, which goes to the point we were talking about earlier, that there's no way to talk about this music. There's no way to talk about this culture without talking about the role of Islam and Muslims as inspirations.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Zahir. And Sue, is there a book, a film, an artist that brings you joy?
Yeah, you know, I am just obsessed with this new show on NBC Peacock called We Are Lady Parts. And it's a UK production by a woman by the name of Nida Mansour, who is so talented. It's a television series, and it is about all female Muslim band members and their trials and tribulations. And it is just so authentic and so real. And I identify with every single character one way or another, you know, and I just cannot wait for season two. So We Are Lady Parts, NBC Peacock.
I love it. I love this type of endorsement. Thank you so much for sharing this with us, Sue. Zahir, tell us, what are you excited about in terms of our event coming up on Tuesday night?
Well, on Clubhouse, which is, you know, this new app that is like sort of audio only community meeting space, we are having a conversation on a vision of our future with Alex Fox and KM of Muslim and Friends, the club on Clubhouse that Alex and KM have cultivated, this really dynamic and lively community of people. And so they'll be gathering with guests, Marguerite Hill, who's the executive director of the Muslim Anti-Racism Collaborative, Ahmed Ali Akbar, who is the host of the award-winning podcast, See Something, Say Something, Dr. Suad Abdul Kabir, the founder and senior editor of Sapelo Square and the curator of Umi's Archive, and Malika Bilal, journalist and podcaster. So they will be gathering on Clubhouse in the Muslims and Friends room to tackle the question, what transformative vision of America emerges when we center Muslim social justice visionaries and practitioners? And so we're looking forward to a lively conversation for people who are unfamiliar with Clubhouse. It allows for people to come up from the audience and ask questions on stage. And it's just really a great interface to have this conversation. I'm just excited to see how the M Word series is utilizing different kinds of platforms for reaching different audiences during this week.
Thank you. I can't wait either. That will be my first event on Clubhouse. I can't wait. And thank you for actually introducing us to the wonderful partners for that event, Alex Fox and Kayem from Muslim and Friends. Now, I know we also have a really exciting evening on Thursday. Adam and Aya, we are doing this event live in New York City at the Green Space. Adam, do you want to tell us more about that?
Yeah, well, like you said, it's going to be an in-person live event, and that is what I am most excited about. I have not experienced that for over a year and a half. A lot of the artists that are coming and performing have not experienced that. So I know they have a lot of pent-up passion that we're going to see. I invited the Brooklyn Nomads, and I spoke to the main musician of the group, Adil Dabak, and when I told him it was a live event, he was super excited to be part of a live in-person event and feel the energy of the crowd and of the performers.
Wonderful.
And also another thing that's really exciting about the event is it's kind of an eclectic mix because we have academics and we have artists, and they're going to be not only performing, but having a conversation on identity and their artistry.
Thank you so much. Aya, would you like to add anything?
I'm just really excited for some of the specific artists that we're going to be seeing. About Lavan Usman, I really love her work. The Kitchen Dweller's Testimony. I love Asada from Asada and the Nubatones. So I'm really excited to see her perform and to hear her speak on the panel. And then Zainab Mabizari from Performing Arts Mosaic is also going to be performing. All of these people together in one place, in conversation. It's just exciting. I don't know what else to say.
Thank you. And in addition to the wonderful artists that you both mentioned, author Mustafa Bayoumi and Asian American Writers Workshop Executive Director Jofrin Udin will be also joining us. So indeed, I can't wait. And our audience joining us virtually on Crowdcast, we welcome you all to just join the experience. Then our last event in the series will be on Friday. And if Sue, you can tell us a little more about that, that would be great.
So I am very excited about the panel that we're going to be having on June 25th called The Power and Politics of Pop Culture. We have a powerhouse panel, which includes Franklin Leonard of The Blacklist, Dr. Maitha Al-Hassan, Mayad Toothy of Boom Gen, and the panel itself is going to be moderated by our very own Zahir Ali, and I'm also on the panel, which I'm very honored to be.
Thank you. And with that, I just want to say once more, thank you, Sue Obeidi, Adam Gagan, Aya Eldosugi, and Zahir Ali for joining us on today's special M-Word edition of the Pen Pod.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
We're still looking forward to it.
Thank you.
And special thanks to our sponsor, the Doris Duke Foundation for Islamic Arts Building Bridges Program. We could not do this series without them, and they have been a supporter of the M-Word event series from the start for many years. For more information about our guests and this week's free M-Word Town Hall series, visit us at pen.org. We'll see you there.
And that's it for this special M-Word edition of the Pen Pod. Go to pen.org and see the week's full lineup of town hall events. And if you're in New York City, one of them is taking place in person. It's one of our first IRL events since the pandemic. And of course, come back here on Friday for our regular weekly episode of the Pen Pod, including Tough Questions with our CEO, Suzanne Nossel, and a conversation about pride and poetry. I'm Stephen Fee for Pen America. This has been a special edition of the Pen Pod. See you Friday. Thank you.